The global debate continues on a possible U.S.-led war against Iraq. However, one long-standing Iraqi dissident is already looking beyond what he hopes will be an Iraqi regime change. Kanan Makia says there are a number of what he calls preconditions, which somehow must become the foundation for a new Iraqi government. Makia recently spoke with Common Ground's Cliff Brockman.
You're a native of Baghdad, and you came to the United States in 1968 to study at MIT, and then you never went back.
I couldn't go back. I was politically active against the regime virtually as soon as I came out, and my father became a persona non grata in the early 1970s. Not that he's political in any way, but they were inventing enemies and looking for them under every bed in those days.
You say that the new state must be a federal system of government. What do you mean by that?
Well, federalism is a new idea in Arab politics. It's entered the Iraqi political scene driven by the Kurdish experience. The Kurdish political parties in 1992, when a Kurdish parliament was voted into existence, voted upon federalism as the kind of Iraq that they were happy to live under. Now, you have to understand, we were just talking about the Anfal operations. The Kurds in Iraq have been through a traumatic experience. They have been brutalized. Their villages have been uprooted. Hundreds of thousands of people have been massacred and killed in genocidal operations. And the trauma of that experience lives with them still. So federalism is for them the condition sine qua non for staying inside Iraq. And I fully accept that, as do most Iraqis. The main Iraqi umbrella opposition group, called the Iraqi National Congress, back in 1992, adopted the federalism as an idea for the solution of the problems of the Iraqi state post-Saddam. And ever since then, every single Iraqi opposition group has defined itself as being for a federal system. Now, there has not been a lot of discussion over what everybody means by this, and there are many definitions at play at the moment. One thing everybody is agreed upon, or two things everybody are agreed on. Number one, that federalism is a serious and real form of devolution of power from the center. Iraq, a very, very centralized state, in which Baghdad has ruled over the provinces, in the view of the overwhelming majority of Iraqis now in the opposition, will no longer be something like that. It will be a state in which the regions have far more central role to play in the determining of politics. Secondly, everyone is agreed that federalism is a thin end of the wedge. This form of devolution of power is a thin end of the wedge of bringing democracy to Iraq. And beyond that, there are a lot of arguments at play at the moment. One of the things I'm doing is working with a team of other Iraqis under the auspices of the Department of State in a project called the Future of Iraq Project, which is attempting to come up with a good working definition of what federalism might mean, or at least lay out the options that are that make sense. And these options will be brought to a conference of the Iraqi opposition for a vote in the near future.
One of the other things you say is that a new state must be non-Arab. What do you mean by that?
Well, if this follows from the discussion on federalism, one of the definitions at play about federalism is that it be ethnically based. The Kurds have been oppressed by an Arab state. So they, in response, one of the Kurdish positions at play at the moment is that therefore we want a ethnic form of federalism, a Kurdish-Arab partnership, where the Kurdish national identity, which is not Arab, is recognized in the construction of the state. The problem with that is that there are many ethnic groups in Iraq, not as large necessarily as the Arabs and the Kurds, but there are Armenians, there are Chaldean Christians, there are Turkomans, there are Assyrians, and these would then all have to have, if you follow through the principle of ethnic federalism, regions of their own. But the formula doesn't make sense, and in my opinion and that of many other Iraqis, would lead to great strife. So one has to resort to a geographic definition of what federalism might mean, where you would have geographically defined regions which might have a majority of Kurds in them, but they would also have Turkomans and Assyrians and Arabs even, and those regions would have a share of national resources and perhaps even regional parliaments of their own, but they would not be defined. Ethnicity would not be the basis of the new state. Now, if you follow that logic through, that means Iraq, which has hitherto always defined itself as an Arab state, could no longer be an Arab state. For it, just as the region cannot be a Kurdish region or a Syrian region or a Turkoman region, so too must the state as a whole not put a premium in a political sense on the quality of being an Arab. So my thought here is to take out of the Iraqi nature of the state any ethnic definition. That means a major revolution in Middle Eastern politics, because again, nothing like this has ever happened before. Iraq would, in the political sense, not of course in the cultural sense, and certainly not in the historical sense, the country remains, you know, the culture of the people is Arab and their history and so on. That is fine, and that will flourish, I hope, very much. But the Arabness should not enter into the political definition of being an Iraqi.
You say a new democratic Iraq then must be secular?
I believe so. Again, following the same logic of federalism. That is, if you are not going to give a primacy to Arabs because they're a majority, or Kurds because they're the second largest majority, we have a minority Christian groups. We have Chaldeans, we have Assyrians, we have other smaller sects, ancient Near Eastern forms of Christianity, which go back to the very, very early period of Christian history. I believe that, in principle, these groups should not be discriminated against, in terms of their citizenship. So it should be possible in the Iraq of the future for a Chaldean Christian to be prime minister or president, even if that's the system of government that's chosen, as much as an Sunni or Shiite Arab or a Muslim or a Kurd or whatever. So religion, again, while I want it to flourish, and it certainly will flourish as it flourishes in the United States, for instance, religion does not enter into the definition of citizenship. That is, I think, what I mean by secularism.
And you're also calling for demilitarization of a new Iraq.
Here, there is a very important logic. Firstly, let me say that is not just an extreme position of just a few Iraqis. In 1991, some 400 people signed a very important document called Charter 91, which called for demilitarized Iraq. What they were saying is that they want something like a Japanese Article 9 to be part of the future constitution of Iraq, in that the Iraqi army could never grow beyond a certain size, and constitutionally the country would take away from itself the option of waging war. So a prescribed limit, of which would be defined, and a constitutional limit on the size of the army, say 2% of the gross national product or something like that, sets a cap on how large the army can grow, conscription be banned, and a small professional army, be the allied Japan and Germany post-World War II, be the answer. What we have here is a different idea of strength that is being debated inside the opposition at the moment. The history of the Ba'ath regime is that strength stands in large armies, weapons of mass destruction, a military-industrial complex, which this regime has successfully built up, but which we see has brought absolute disaster for the people of Iraq over the years. This notion of strength, which unfortunately is also culturally accepted in the Arab world, that you have to face up to Israel, so you need a huge standing army, you need special weapons, Israel has nuclear weapons, so you need nuclear weapons. That game, that tit-for-tat game, which has escalated the arms race in the Middle East, is what I am calling for rejecting, and what a lot of Iraqis want to do as well. Now, we say strength is internal. Strength lies in the wealth-producing capabilities of a country. Strength lies in the educational potentials, in what is happening in the economy, and so on and so forth, not in these things and in these weapons of mass destruction and in these kind of large standing armies, which, of course, have become the norm in Iraq. You have to remember here that Iraq developed its army way out of proportion to the size of its population. It was only possible to do that on the, so to speak, on the back of the oil revenues that fueled all of this. I once calculated in one of my first books, Republic of Fear, the number of institutionally armed men in Iraq per 1,000 members of the population. And the figure is out of all proportion to other dictatorships in the world, whether it be, say, the Brazilian dictatorship of the 60s, Iran under the Shah, or anything you could think of. Iraq is in a league unto its own. And that is what needs to be changed.
What kind of hope do you have for a new democratic Iraq?
I must say that I have been hearing things from the Bush administration at the highest levels that give me great, great deal of hope. Only the other day, Condoleezza Rice said that the United States was in there for the long haul, that the United States was interested in the reconstruction of Iraq, and let's not forget Iraq is a country that can pay for its own reconstruction, and that democracy was the goal. From my experiences with the senior officials in the Department of State and in the Vice President's Office and the Department of Defense, they are very serious about doing something dramatically new in Iraq, something like what happened in Germany or Japan after World War II. And if that's the case, if that is actually what follows through after the regime change takes place, then we are talking about a moment in the Middle East that's as great as anything since the fall of the Ottoman Empire back in 1917.
Do you think you'd ever go back to Iraq?
I certainly will. I absolutely certainly will feel my way and try to be part of the process of rebuilding the country.
Kanaan Makiya has lived in the United States since 1968. He is currently a professor of Near East Studies at Brandeis University in Massachusetts. For Common Ground, I'm Cliff Brockman.